15.
What?
The name means something to you.
Well, of course it does.
He stared at Thorby.
There's no resemblance.
Adopted, I said. The colonel adopted him, on Jubal. Colonel Brisby closed the door. Then he said to Krause,
Colonel Bascom is dead, or missing and presumed dead, these past 2 years.
I know. The boy has been with me. I can report some details of the colonel's death, if they are not known.
You, were one of his couriers?
Yes.
You can prove it.
X3079, code FT.
That can be checked. Well, assume it is for the moment. By what means do you identify, Thorby Baslam?
Thorby did not follow the conversation. There was a buzzing in his ears, as if the tracker was being fed too much power, and the room was swelling and then growing smaller. He did figure out that this officer knew Pop, which was good, but what was this about Pop being a colonel? Pop was Baslam the cripple, licensed medicant, under the mercy... Colonel Brisby told him sharply to sit down, which he was glad to do. Then the colonel speeded up the airblower. He turned to Captain Krause.
All right, I'm sold. I don't know what regulation I'm authorized to do it under. We are required to give assistance to X-Corps people, but this is not quite that. But I can't let Colonel Bascom down.
Distressed citizen, suggested Krause.
Eh? I don't see how that can be stretched to fit a person on a planet under the hegemony, who is obviously not distressed, other than a little white around the gills, I mean. But I'll do it.
Thank you, Skipper. Krause glanced at his watch. May I go? In fact, I must.
Just a second. You're simply leaving him with me?
I'm afraid that's the way it must be. Brisby shrugged.
As you say. But stay for lunch. I want to find out more about Colonel Baslam.
I'm sorry I can't. You can reach me at the gathering if you need to.
I will. Well, coffee at least.
The ship commander reached for a button. Skipper? Krause said with distress, looking again at his watch. I must leave now. Today is our remembrance, and my mother's funeral is in 50 minutes.
What? Oh, why didn't you say so? Goodness, man, you'll never make it.
I'm very much afraid so, but I had to do this.
I'll fix that.
The colonel snatched open the door.
Eddie, an air car for Captain Krause. Speed run. Take him off the top and put him down where he says. Crash.
Aye, aye, Skipper.
Brisby turned back, raised his eyebrows, then stepped into the outer office. Krause was facing Thorby, his mouth working painfully.
Come here, son.
Yes, Father?
I have to go now.
Maybe you can manage to be at a gathering someday.
I'll try, Father.
If not, well, the blood stays in the steel. The steel stays in the blood. You're still Sisu.
The steel stays in the blood.
Good business, son. Be a good boy.
Good business. Oh, Father.
Stop it. You'll have me doing it. Listen. I'll take your responses this afternoon. You must not show up.
Yes, sir.
Your mother loves you. And so do I.
Brisby tapped on the open door.
Your car is waiting, Captain.
Coming, Skipper? Krause kissed Thorby on both cheeks and turned suddenly away, so that all Thorby saw was his broad back. Colonel Brisby returned presently, sat down, looked at Thorby, and said,
I don't know quite what to do with you, but we'll manage.
He touched a switch.
Have someone dig up the birthing master-at-arms, Eddie.
He turned to Thorby.
We'll make out, if you're not too fussy. You traders live pretty luxuriously, I understand.
Sir?
Yes?
Baslam was a colonel? Of your service?
Well, yes.
Thorby had now had a few minutes to think, and old memories had been stirred mightily. He said hesitatingly,
I have a message for you, I think.
From Colonel Baslam?
Yes, sir. I'm supposed to be in a light trance, but I think I can start it. Carefully, Thorby recited a few code groups. Is this for you? Colonel Brisby again hastily closed the door. Then he said earnestly,
Don't ever use that code, unless you are certain everyone in earshot is cleared for it, and the room has been debugged.
I'm sorry, sir.
No harm done. But anything in that code is hot, and I just hope that it hasn't cooled off in 2 years.
He touched the talker switch again.
Betty, cancel the master-at-arms. Get me the psych officer. If he's out of ship, have him chased down.
He looked at Thorby.
I still don't know what to do with you. I ought to lock you in the safe.
The long message was squeezed out of Thorby in the presence only of Colonel Brisby, his executive officer, Vice Colonel Stinky Stanky, and the ship's psychologist, Medical Captain Isidore Krishnamurti. The session went slowly. Dr. Chris did not often use hypnotherapy. Thorby was so tense that he resisted, and the exec had a blasphemous time with recording equipment. But at last the psychologist straightened up and wiped his face.
"That's all, I think," he said wearily.
"But what is it?"
"Forget you heard it, Doc," advised Brisby. "Better yet cut your throat."
"Gee, thanks, boss."
Stanky said, "Pappy, let's run him through again. I've got this mad scientist dream working better. His accent may have garbled it."
"Nonsense. The kid speaks pure Terran."
"Okay, so it's my ears. I've been exposed to bad influences. Been aboard too long."
"If," Brisby answered calmly, "that is a slur on your commanding officer's pure speech, I consider the source. Stinkpot, is it true that you lifts right down anything you want understood?"
"Only with our leashy, sir. Nothing personal, you ask. Well, how about it? I've got the noise filtered out."
"Doc?"
"The subject is fatigued. Is this your only opportunity?"
"Aim. He'll be with us quite a while." "Oh, all right, wake him."
Shortly, Thorby was handed over to the birthing P.O., several liters of coffee, a tray of sandwiches, and one skipped meal later, the colonel and his second-in-command had recorded in clear the thousands of words of old Baslam the Beggar's final report. Stanky sat back and whistled.
"You can relax, Pappy. This stuff didn't cool off. A half-life of a century, on a guess."
Brisby answered soberly,
"Yes, and a lot of good boys will die before it does."
"You ain't fooling. What gets me is that traitor kid, running around the galaxy with all that burn before reading between his ears. Shall I, slide down and poison him?"
"What? And have to fill out all those copies?"
"Well, maybe Chris can wipe it out of his tender gray matter without resorting to a transorbital."
"Anybody touches that kid, and Colonel Baslam will rise up out of his grave and strangle him, is my guess. Did you know Baslam, Stinky?"
"One course under him in psychological weapons, my last year at the Academy, just before he went X-Corps. Most brilliant mind I've ever met. Except yours, of course, Pappy. Sir, boss."
"Don't strain yourself. No doubt he was a brilliant teacher. He would be tops at anything. But you should have known him before he was on limited duty. I was privileged to serve under him. Now that I have a ship of my own, I just ask myself, what would Baslam do? He was the best commanding officer a ship ever had. It was during his second crack at Colonel. He had been up to Wing Marshal and put in for a reduction to have a ship again, to get away from a desk."
Stanky shook his head.
"I can't wait for a nice cushy desk, where I can write recommendations nobody will read."
"You aren't Baslam. If it wasn't hard, he didn't like it."
"I'm no hero. I'm more the salt of the earth. Pappy, were you with him in the rescue of the Hansia?"
"You think I would fail to wear the ribbon?" "No, thank goodness. I had been transferred. That was a hand weapons job. Messy."
"Maybe you would have had the sense not to volunteer."
"Stinky, even you would volunteer, fat and lazy as you are, if Baslam asked for volunteers."
"I'm not lazy, I'm efficient. But riddle me this. What was a CO doing leading a landing party?"
The old man followed regulations only when he agreed with them. He wanted to crack at slavers with his own hands. He hated slavers with a cold passion. So, he comes back a hero, and what can the department do? Wait until he gets out of hospital and court-martial him? Stinky. Even top brass can be sensible when they have their noses rubbed in it. So they cited him for above and beyond under unique circumstances, and put him on limited duty. But from here on, when unique circumstances arise, every commanding officer knows that he can't thumb through the book for an alibi. It'll be up to him to continue the example.
Not me, Stanky said firmly.
You, when you're a CO and comes time to do something unpleasant, there you'll be, trying to get your tummy in and your chest out, with your chubby little face set in hero lines. You won't be able to help it. The Baslam conditioned reflex will hit you.
Around dawn they got to bed. Brisby intended to sleep late, but long habit took him to his desk, only minutes late. He was not surprised to find his professedly lazy exec already at work. His paymaster lieutenant was waiting. The fiscal officer was holding a message for him. Brisby recognized it. The night before, after hours of dividing Baslam's report into phrases, then recoding it to be sent by split routes, he had realized that there was one more chore before he could sleep. Arrange for identification search on Colonel Baslam's adopted son. Brisby had no confidence that a waif picked up on Jubal could be traced in the vital records of the hegemony, but if the old man sent for a bucket of space, that was what he wanted and no excuses. Toward Baslam, dead or not, Colonel Brisby maintained the attitudes of a junior officer. So he had written a dispatch and left word with the duty officer to have Thorby fingerprinted and the prints coded at reveille. Then he could sleep. Brisby looked at the message.
"Hasn't this gone out?"
he demanded.
"The photo lab is coding the prints now, Skipper. But the comm office brought it to me for a charge, since it was for service outside the ship."
"Well, sign it. Do I have to be bothered with every routine matter?"
The paymaster decided that the old man had been missing sleep again.
"Bad news, Skipper."
"Okay, spill it."
"I don't know of a chance to cover it. I doubt if there is an appropriation to fit it, even if we could figure out a likely sounding charge."
"I don't care what charge. Pick one and get that message moving. Use that general one, something.
Unpredictable overhead, administrative. It won't work, Skipper. Making an identity search on a civilian cannot be construed as ship's overhead.
Oh, I can put that charge number on and you'll get an answer, but..."
"That's what I want, an answer."
"Yes, sir, but eventually it reaches the general accounting office, and the wheels go round, and a card pops out with a red tag. Then my pay is checked until I pay it back. That's why they make us blokes study law, as well as accounting."
"You're breaking my heart. Okay, Pay, if you're too sissy to sign it, tell me what charge number that overhead thing is. I'll write it in and sign my name and rank, okay?"
Yes, sir, but, Skipper..."
"Pay, I've had a hard night."
"Yes, sir. I'm required by law to advise you. You don't have to take it, of course."
"Of course,"
Brisby agreed grimly.
"Skipper, have you any notion how expensive an identification search can be?"
"It can't be much. I can't see why you are making such an aching issue of it. I want a clerk to get off his fundament and look in the files. I doubt if they'll bill us routine courtesy."
"I wish I thought so, sir. But you've made this an unlimited search. Since you haven't named a planet, first it'll go to Tycho City. Live files and dead. Or do you want to limit it to live files?"
Brisby thought. If Colonel Baslam had believed that this young man had come from inside civilization, then it was likely that the kid's family thought he was dead.
"No."
"Too bad. Dead files are 3 times as big as the live. So they searched at Tycho. It takes a while, even with machines, over 20 billion entries. Suppose you get a null result. A coded inquiry goes to vital bureaus on all planets. Since great archives are never up to date and some planetary governments don't send in records anyhow. Now the cost mounts, especially if you use n-space routing. Exact coding on a fingerprint set is a fair-sized book. Of course, if you take one planet at a time and use mail..."
"No.
Well, Skipper, why not put a limit on it? 1,000 credits, or
Whatever you can afford if... I mean, when... they check your pay.
1,000 credits? Ridiculous!
If I'm wrong, the limitation won't matter. If I'm right, and I am, 1,000 credits could just be a starter. Then your neck isn't out too far.
Brisby scowled.
P, you aren't working for me to tell me I can't do things.
Yes, sir.
You're here to tell me how I can do what I'm going to do anyhow. So, start digging through your books and find out how. Legally and free.
Aye, aye, sir.
Brisby did not go right to work. He was fuming. Someday they would get the service so fouled up in red tape, they'd never get a ship off the ground. He bet that the old man had gone into the exotic corps with a feeling of relief. Ex-corps agents didn't have red tape. One of them finds it necessary to spend money, he just did so. 10 credits or 10 million. That was how to operate. Pick your men, then trust them. No regular reports, no forms, no nothing. Just do what needs to be done. Whereupon he picked up the ship's quarterly fuel and engineering report. He put it down, reached for a message form, wrote a follow-up on Vaslam's report, informing Exotic Bureau that the unclassified courier who had delivered report was still in jurisdiction of Siner, and in Siner's opinion, additional data could be had if Siner were authorized to discuss report with courier at discretion. He decided not to turn it over to the code and cipher group. He opened his safe and set about coding it. He had just finished when the paymaster knocked. Brisby looked up.
So, you found the paragraph?
Perhaps, Skipper. I've been talking with the executive officer.
Shoot.
I see we have subject person aboard.
Now don't tell me I need a charge for that.
Not at all, Skipper. I'll absorb his ration in the rush. You keep him aboard forever and I won't notice. Things don't get awkward until they get on the books. But how long do you expect to keep him? It must be more than a day or two, or you wouldn't want an identity search.
The commanding officer frowned.
It may be quite a while. First, I've got to find out who he is, where he's from. Then, if we're going that way, I intend to give him an unlogged lift. If we aren't, well, I'll pass him along to a ship that is. Too complicated to explain, Pei, but necessary.
Okay. Then why not enlist him?
Huh?
It would clear up everything.
Brisby frowned.
I see. I could take him along legally and arrange a transfer, and it would give you a charge number, but... Well, suppose Shiva 3 is the spot and his enlistment is not up. Can't just tell him to desert. Besides, I don't know that he wants to enlist.
You can ask him. How old is he?
I doubt if he knows. He's a waif.
So much the better. You ship him. Then when you find out where he has to go, you discover an error in his age, and correct it. It turns out that he reaches his majority in time to be paid off on his home planet.
Brisby blinked.
P? Are all paymasters dishonest?
Only the good ones. You don't like it, sir?
I love it. Okay, I'll check. And I'll hold up that dispatch. We'll send it later.
The paymaster looked innocent.
Oh, no, sir. We won't ever send it.
How's that?
It won't be necessary. We'll enlist him to fill vacancy and complement. We send in records to my personnel.
They make the routine check. Name and home planet.
Hecate, I suppose, since we got him here. By then we're long gone. They don't find him registered here. Now they turn it over to Bi-Security, who sends us a priority, telling us not to permit subject personnel to serve in sensitive capacity. But that's all, because it's possible that this poor innocent citizen never got registered. But they can't take chances. So they start the very search you want. First Tycho, then everywhere else. Security priority. So they identify him, and unless he's wanted for murder, it's a routine muddle. Or they can't identify him, and have to make up their minds whether to register him, or give him 24 hours to get out of the galaxy. 7 to 2, they decide to forget it. Except that someone aboard is told to watch him, and report suspicious behavior. But the real beauty of it is that the job carries a bi-security cost charge.
P, do you think that security has agents in this vessel I don't know about?
Skipper, what do you think?
Hmm.
I don't know. But if I were chief of security, I would have. Confound it! If I lift a civilian from here to the rim, that'll be reported too, no matter what I log.
Shouldn't be surprised, sir.
Get out of here. I'll see if the lad will buy it.
He flipped a switch.
Eddie?
Instead of sending for Thorby, Brisby directed the surgeon to examine him, since it was pointless to pressure him to enlist without determining whether or not he could. Medical Major Stein, accompanied by Medical Captain Krishnamurti, reported to Brisby before lunch.
Well?
No physical objection, Skipper. I'll let the psych officer speak for himself.
All right. By the way, how old is he?
He doesn't know.
Yes, yes. Brisby agreed impatiently. But how old do you think he is?
Dr. Stein shrugged.
What's his genetic picture? What environment?
Any age factor mutations? High or low gravity planet? Planetary metabolic index? He could be as young as 10 standard years, as old as 30 on physical appearance. I can assign a fictional adjusted age on the assumption of no significant mutations. And Terra-equivalent environment, an unjustified assumption until they build babies with data plates. An adjusted age of not less than 14 standard years, and not more than 22.
Would an adjusted age of 18 fit?
That's what I said.
Okay. Make it just under that. Minority enlistment.
There's a tattoo on him, Dr. Krishnamurti offered, which might give a clue. A slave mark.
The deuce, you say?
Colonel Brisby reflected that his follow-up dispatch to X-Corps was justified.
Dated?
Just a manumission. A Saganese date which fits his story. The mark is a factor's mark. No date.
Too bad. Well, now that he is clear with medical, I'll send for him.
Colonel.
Eh, yes, Chris?
I cannot recommend enlistment.
Huh? He's the same as you are.
Surely, but he is a poor risk.
Why?
I interviewed subject under light trance this morning. Colonel, did you ever keep a dog?
No, not many where I come from.
Very useful laboratory animals. They parallel many human characteristics. Take a puppy. Abuse him. Kick him. Mistreat him. He'll revert to feral carnivore. Take his little brother. Pet him, talk to him, let him sleep with you, but train him. He is a happy, well-behaved house pet. Take another from that same litter. Pet him on even days, and kick him on odd days. You'll have him so confused that he'll be ruined for either role. He can't survive as a wild animal, and he doesn't understand what is expected of a pet. Pretty soon, he won't eat, he won't sleep, he can't control his functions. He just cowers and shivers.
Do you, psychologists do such things often?
I never have. But it's in the literature. And this lad's case parallels it. He's undergone a series of traumatic experiences in his formative years. The latest of which was yesterday. He's confused and depressed. Like that dog, he may snarl and bite at any time. He ought not to be exposed to new pressures. He should be cared for, but he can be given psychotherapy.
Phooey.
The psychological officer shrugged. Colonel Brisby added,
I apologize, Doctor, but I know something about this case, with all respect to your training. This lad has been in good environment the past couple of years.
Brisby recalled the farewell he had unwillingly witnessed,
and before that he was in the hands of Colonel Richard Baslam. Heard of him?
I know his reputation.
If there is any fact I would stake my ship on, it is that Colonel Baslam would never ruin a boy. Okay, so the kid has had a rough time, but he has also been succored by one of the toughest, sanest, most humane men ever to wear our uniform. You bet on your dogs, I'll bet Colonel Richard Baslam. Now, are you advising me not to enlist him?
The psychologist hesitated. Brisby said,
Well?
Major Stein interrupted.
Take it easy, Chris. I'm overriding you.
Brisby said,
I want a straight answer. Then I'll decide.
Dr. Krishnamurti said slowly,
Suppose I record my opinions but state that there are no certain grounds for refusing enlistment.
Why?
Obviously you want to enlist this boy. But if he gets into trouble, well, my endorsement could get him a medical discharge instead of a sentence.
He's had enough about bricks.
Colonel Brisby clapped him on the shoulder.
Good boy, Chris. That's all, gentlemen.
Thorby spent an unhappy night. The master-at-arms billeted him in senior P.O.'s quarters, and he was well-treated, but embarrassingly aware of the polite way in which those around him did not stare at his gaudy Sisu dress uniform. Up till then he had been proud of the way Sisu's dress stood out. Now he was learning painfully that clothing has its proper background. That night he was conscious of snores around him, strangers, fracky, and he yearned to be back among people where he was known, understood, recognized. He tossed on a harder bed than he was used to, and wondered who would get his own. He found himself wondering whether anyone had ever claimed the hole he still thought of as home. Would they repair the door? Would they keep it clean and decent the way Pop liked? What would they do with Pop's leg? Asleep, he dreamt of Pop and of Sisu, all mixed up. At last, with grandmother shortened and a raider bearing down, Pop whispered,
"No more bad dreams, Thorby. Never again, son. Just happy dreams."
He slept peacefully then, and awoke in this forbidding place with gabbling fracky all around him. Breakfast was substantial, but not up to Aunt Athena's high standards. However, he was not hungry. After breakfast, he was quietly tasting his misery when he was required to undress and submit to indignities. It was his first experience with medical men's offhand behavior with human flesh. He loathed the poking and prodding. When the commanding officer sent for him, Thorby was not even cheered by seeing the man who knew Pop. This room was where he had had to say a last good business to Father. The thoughts lingering there were not good. He listened, listlessly, while Brisby explained. He woke up a little when he understood that he was being offered status. Not much, he gathered, but status. The Fracky had status among themselves. It had never occurred to him that Fracky's status could matter even to Fracky.
"You don't have to," Colonel Brisby concluded, "but it will make simpler the thing Colonel Baslam wanted me to do. Find your family, I mean. You would like that, wouldn't you?"
Thorby almost said that he knew where his family was, but he knew what the colonel meant. His own Sib, whose existence he had never quite been able to imagine. Did he really have blood relatives somewhere?
"I suppose so," he answered slowly. "I don't know."
Brisby wondered what it was like to have no frame to your picture.
"Colonel Baslam was anxious to have me locate your family. I can handle it easier if you are officially one of us.
Well, it's Guardsman Third Class, 30 credits a month, all you can eat and not enough sleep, and glory. A meager amount."
Thorby looked up. "This is the same service my pop, Colonel Baslam, you call him, was in? He really was?"
"Yes. Senior to what you will be, but the same service. I think you started to say family? We like to think of the service as one enormous family. Colonel Baslam was one of the more distinguished members of it."
"Then I want to be adopted."
"Enlisted."
Whatever the word is.